To SER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say it's so hot right now.
Tan caliente ahora!
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Thank you, Sean. Good morning. Welcome to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of pop culture right here on 2SER. My name is Joel Kasem, and I'll be filling in for Sophie Lai this week. Now, I'm not 100% sure why I got asked to do the show today, because I'm nowhere near as cool as Soph, but I'm probably not even cool enough to say pop culture. I think I have to say popular culture, you know? But I'm going to do my best. Okay, so up today, we'll be catching up with David Parker, head of the 9th Korean Film Festival. John Russell, Australia's French Impressionist, will be talking Cement Fondue's exhibition launch, Between Suns and the Refugee Art Project. But coming up next, Sita will be catching up with Laura Nash, and to get us there, here's a bit of Low Fly Incline, sorry, with Silver Cadillac. You're on 2SER. Yeah, low flight incline there with Silver Cadillac. Now, Laura Nash's exhibition entitled Performing Perfection brings to life the realities of how weight loss surgery can affect the individual's sense of self. Sorry, our producer Cedar Sargent spoke with Laura about her uniquely spectacular show. Here's what she found out.
Performing Perfection is the powerful new exhibition showing at the University of New South Wales Arts and Design Space from emerging artist Laura Nash. It explores the transformative effects of losing 105 kilos through weight loss surgery. Through her art, Laura reflects on her journey in discovering and rediscovering the self after a major transformation. Earlier this week, I caught up with Laura. Here's what she had to say about the inspiration and meaning behind Performing Perfection.
The main focuses would be twofold. So it's the, you know, identity of, like, where I sit now and that kind of thing of, like, who Laura is now post-weight loss, post this transformation. And it's also, like, the manifestation of excess, so how that kind of sits in a, you know, pre-weight loss body and a post-weight loss body. So basically how I feel is you trade one form of excess for another. So you trade excess weight for excess skin. You can't have one without the other. So weight loss surgery is always like glorified as like, oh, you must feel so much better. You must be so much happier in yourself. You must have so much more energy. And it's, yeah, but because, yeah, now I have, you know, this body that is very alien to me. That is, you know, big on excess skin because, yeah, you can't lose 100 kilos. Skin doesn't work that way. It's like an overstretched elastic band. So it's kind of not necessarily finding acceptance in, but more reconciling in that excess. So, like, you know, and just adding, like, providing a kind of overall view of what I've been through in terms of excess, because it's the thing that's always niggling in the back of my head, like, oh, I can, you know, wear such cool clothes, or, you know, I have so much more freedom now that I'm not that big, but, so it's the, yeah, but in this scenario. So that's kind of been the, yeah, the dual focus of what I've done. My majors were in drawing and painting, so when I'd started this project looking at, you know, my transformation and exploring that through art, I had originally, you know, wrapped up with my oil paints and my charcoal and be like, yeah, let's do it. And that didn't obviously, yeah, didn't really go as planned in that regard. I did like mock-ups of like areas of excess skin, like in like photos, and I was gonna, yeah, I had them printed out really large, and I was thinking in terms of composition and like tones and things like that. And then basically my feedback from those was, you don't need to paint these have that authenticity, you don't need to, you know, transcribe them into another medium, they're good as is. So I initially I was more focused on like photography, and then for the final project and where I've moved on, yeah, the finalization of my honours degree, I've moved into video. Because basically that movement, again, because I wanted to have my authentic experience, not something that's stylized. I just wanted to show what it was. So that's why I felt like I could most accurately get that through video. So in terms of what I've actually made, to start off, we've got excess, literally. So I've made a bag that weighs how much I've lost. So if you attempt to lift it, it weighs 100 kilos. And it's itself is an item of excess. It's 2.5 meters long, so it's, yeah, just excess fabric holding so much weight. I filled it through with old clothes that no longer fit me, that are like double my size, so it looks soft, but if you attempt to engage with this item, it's literally weighed down. To pair with that, I filmed myself displaying my excess while trying to lift the bag. And in this video, I'm trying as hard as I can to get this bag off the ground, and I can't move it. If you're a particularly, you know, stupid, like, mad dude bro, you can get it off the ground if you really want to. But then there's always the deafening crash when they go, oh wait, this is 100 kilos and I don't want to break my feet. So it is quite funny when you occasionally hear that big noise if you're not in the local area. But for me, someone that lived with that weight for 23 years, it's quite confronting that I can't even make it get off the ground, and I walked around for that. Then also I have my surgery footage, and that was quite challenging to work out how to display that, because basically if it's up open, like on a screen or projected, it's what your eye immediately goes to, because it's like it's that gore, it's that medical curiosity, it's, yeah, people like to watch medical documentaries, it's that kind of vibe it gets. So I decided to contain it, so instead of having it out in the open, it's, I've made a freestanding display box where you have to look down into through a peephole. So it mirrors that notion of keyhole surgery and how that's actually performed. And yeah, it's quite voyeuristic, but it's also, yeah, it's contained and it allows for that escape, so you can still be in the exhibition but not have to encounter the surgery footage if you don't want to, because it's definitely not everyone's cup of tea. I also filmed myself basically simulating the removal of excess, because that's basically the next point on the timeline. So we have point A being the surgery footage, and we have future points down the line that we haven't hit yet of being the removal of excess, which is going to not be fun, to put it lightly. Like, I feel like I don't even know what pain is, because it's just a whole other level of just bad. So I'm trying to basically reconcile with that and work out, like, is it worth it? Is the outcome worth the cost? So that's why I basically film myself simulating that removal of excess, showing areas of excess skin and then ripping away that simulation of skin. And it has a very visceral noise as well, which kind of makes people uncomfortable. But considering it's not that graphic, it is a bit of a disconnect between the two. Because people think, oh, band-aid level of pain, and yeah, there's no pain at all associated with it. But that's quite funny. And finally, I filmed myself trying on old clothes, that, you know, basically pieces of clothing that used to be like my favorite items. And, you know, what I would wear when I wanted to feel like the most pretty or the most feminine. And yeah, basically film myself trying them on, because for the main fact, I still have them all. I haven't been able to let go of that old piece of myself, even though they're never going to fit. I don't want to wear them. They're not my style anymore, but I still have them, because what if? What if? And it's something that all weight loss surgery patients, I feel like they, and people who just lost weight in general, it's the what if you gain it all back? What are you going to do? What are you going to wear? So it's that kind of fear that's made me hang on to this. So I wanted to film myself trying them on and kind of like an act of self-care, of like that discarding that you don't need to hold on to this. It's okay, you can let it go and you can walk forward as a new, like, fully realized person.
Now, 105 kilos is a huge amount of weight to lose. Apart from the obvious physical dimensions, how has this changed and transformed you as a person?
Basically, if you'd met me 2 years ago, I would be a very different person, not just like appearance-wise, but also personality-wise, sitting in front of you, because I really feel like I've come into my own, if that makes sense, post-weight loss surgery. So it's not necessarily a gained confidence, it's more of a gained understanding. So I don't necessarily feel more confident, I just feel like I just am myself. So I don't have to hide behind like a body that didn't, you know, connect with myself. In saying that, yeah, it's not necessarily entirely positive or negative experience. It just, yeah, is one. But yeah, so yeah, it's not just, definitely not just a physical transformation. It's a ton of mental stuff. Like, yeah, people will meet me who've known me from years ago, and they're like, oh, you're so different now. And it's just, yeah, the way I present myself has changed.
Yeah, so with the work, and you said that you've been doing it for your honours year, so that's like a full year.
Mm-hmm.
How have you kind of found just dealing with it pretty much every day and being confronted with, you know, like this big moment in your life?
Yeah, so it's, The way I would, like, if I could describe it in, like, two words, it's, like, challenging catharsis. So you spending a year working through something and, like, picking it apart to, like, the tiny, like, minuscule level, like, really delving into it is, like, it's given me so much of a better understanding of myself. But obviously doing something like that for so long, it's, yeah, it gets draining, obviously. But I wouldn't change what I've chosen to focus on for anything. To me, like, where I currently sit and, like, academically wise, doing it, like, my honours year is the biggest thing I've ever done. And it would be remiss to not do focus that on the biggest thing that's happened to me with how my practice sits. So that's, yeah, that's why the two link up. So it's been challenging, but I've gained so much at the same time.
That was producer Cedar Sargent chatting with artist Laura Nash about her exhibition of self-discovery and, of course, rediscovery. Laura Nash's exhibition is on now until the 28th of July, so snatch up those tickets while you can. But up next, we will be chatting about two powerful exhibitions that offer insight into the Australian migrant and refugee experience, so stay tuned to hear more. Up now, though, it's Ned Doney with Labour of Love. You're on 2SER.
If it must be done, let it be a labour of love. If it must come down, let it fall from heaven above.
Join Team UTS at the 2018 City to Surf and get exclusive team benefits and perks. You'll wear the UTS team singlet and have exclusive access to the Bondi Beach marquee. At the end of the race, enjoy free food, drinks and massages for Team UTS members only. Visit activateuts.com.au to register now before it's too late. Activate UTS sponsors 2SER 107.3.
Unique Australian voices to emerge this century, Courtney Barnett makes her headline concert hall debut at Sydney Opera House this August. I need a little time now. Performing songs from her new album, Tell Me How You Really Feel, join the four-time ARIA winner and full band. Book now for Courtney Barnett, August 23 and 25 at sydneyoperahouse.com. Sponsors of 2SER.
David Dungay Jr. died in Long Bay Jail after he refused to stop eating a packet of biscuits.
On the morning of December 29th, 2015, corrective service officers stormed the Dungay man's cell.
I'm Taylor Fuller.
I am Miles Herbert. And this is Breathless, the death of David Dungay Jr.
From Guardian Australia and 2SER 107.3, the Dungay family's journey for justice.
Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
Cement Fondue is a new and unique live art space in Paddington and is launching two thought-evoking exhibitions. They are called Between Suns and The Refugee Art Project. Both exhibitions aim to evoke the sense of healing and reflection by offering insight into the artist's personal narrative of their human experience. The launch will be celebrated with cabaret-style performances, South Asian canopies and soulful music, hosted by Two Boys in Saras today from 2 p.m. We are joined live in the studio by with founder and coordinator of the Refugee Art Project, Safdar Ahmed, and two artists from Between Suns, James Nguyen and Shivanji Lal. Have I said that correctly this time? Close. Ooh, I should turn your mic on. Try again.
Close. It's Shivanji.
Shivanji. I'll get there. I'll get there by the end, I promise.
Sure.
Welcome and thank you for joining us today. It's such a big day for you on your big launch.
Yeah.
So firstly, can you briefly tell us about what we can expect from today's launch? Go for it. Anyone.
I guess you'll get to experience some new works and old works by five contemporary Australian artists and a really beautiful install by the Refugee Art Project.
Mm-hmm.
Also the Two Boys and Saris.
Yeah, and Two Boys and Saris. What more do you need?
James, you're one of the five established Australian artists showcasing your work in the Between Suns exhibition. Can you briefly tell us about your piece called Pure Water?
Okay, so basically it's just looking at the chemical histories of Sydney's water system. So I'm looking at kind of like Homebush Bay and how the pollutants from that had kind of washed back up into Duck River, where I kind of grew up in.
Okay.
And so it turns out the pollutants that are in that river are Agent Orange and dioxins. The same chemicals that basically were used in the Vietnam War.
Right.
Yeah, and so it turns out that Australia during the 1960s and 70s produced a lot of the Agent Orange that was used in that war then, yeah.
How are you conveying this then? What sort of symbols are you using?
I'm pretty literal person.
Okay, yeah, straight to the point.
Yeah, so basically me and my auntie, we just went down Duck River, spent some time to collect some of the poisoned chemical water.
Right.
And in the gallery, we just decided to diffuse that water and introduce that into the eastern suburbs. So.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very interesting. Shivanjini, yep. Did I get it?
Yep.
Sorry. I don't know why I'm struggling with your name today. Your video installation showcases the traditional gesture of pranama. Can you explain what this word means and how it is explored?
So pranama is like a formal bowing to an elder or teacher or somebody important to you. And so for me, the gesture is deeply connected to my relationship with my grandmother and my inability to actually do that gesture. And so when I lost my grandmother, I thought I didn't think about that gesture at all for a really long time. But it came up in a different project and I thought it would be really interesting to take that gesture and return it to something that felt like an ancestral or an elder. And so one of the video works is me trying to do that gesture into India, into the landscape in India. So it was kind of like this offering that I couldn't make in real life but am now able to. I don't know if it works or if it makes sense, but that's what that means.
Well, that's obviously very emotional. Was that hard for you to do?
Yeah, I bet.
And
it was interesting because the work actually is like 10, well, actually is 12 smaller videos, and is kind of dedicated to actually each individual member of my family, but it's kind of collated into one big video.
Wow, sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, Safda, you've been involved with the Refugee Art Project since about 2010?
Yeah.
What was it that drew you to working with this group?
It sort of happened almost by accident. In a way, a friend of mine was visiting the Villawood Detention Centre, and I'd always wanted to see what the conditions were like inside that centre. And so I suppose I visited the first time, but then I wanted to do something constructive rather than just go in and gawk at people and then walk out again. And having studied art and doing a lot of art on the side, I thought, oh, I'll see if someone wants to draw with me. And so from there, we created a little art circle for people who were keen to kind of express themselves. And the works produced from that workshop within the centre were very powerful. And so that's how Refugee Art Project formed, I suppose.
Right. Okay. And so it's launching today, 2 p.m. What sort of things can people expect to see at the launch?
A little mixture of works from different groups of people. So I guess the groups that you find in Australia's detention system are people who've come by boat from Indonesia seeking asylum. And so a large group of Sri Lankan Tamils came in from the 2009 Sri Lankan War. So we've got a little group of paintings by a Sri Lankan Tamil refugee referring to that event. You also have work by some Hazara Afghans who fled from Afghanistan and Pakistan. And we've also done a lot of things with Iranians, and Burmese Rohingya and a few other groups who you find in detention. So I guess a little cross-section.
Wow, that sounds
work.
Very interesting. You guys must be very excited for today. Actually, can you all just tell us how excited you are? One
super
by
excited.
One.
Super excited.
Yeah.
Excellent. We've been chatting with artist James Shivanjani from Between Suns and Safdar, founder of, and coordinator of the Refugee Art Project. These two powerful exhibitions are launching today at Cement Fondue's live art space at 2 p.m. in Paddington. We'll put all the links and whatnot up on the website so people can get there. It's like in 2.5 hours, so you guys should probably have to get there. Thank you so much for coming in, and good luck today.
Thanks
so
much.
Thank you.
Coming up next is a bit of Ty Segall with Children of Paul. Bit of Ty Segall there with Children of Paul. Up next on 2SCR, we'll be speaking to David Park, the festival director of the 9th Korean Film Festival, showing in cities across Australia, especially Sydney. That's why we're doing it.
Ah oui, gain de moment, l'homme était fantasme, parce que la vie pour moi, gain de fois pas favorable. L'entend des maps chanter, gain l'autre même qui n'a la peine. Nous c'est qui a prié, nous c'est qui même dans la joie. Mais la vie pour moi, c'est une vraie tragédie. Mais la vie pour moi, c'est une vraie tragédie. Musique.
quelques moments, l'homme était comme ta vie. Parce que la vie pour moi, gain de fois pas favorable. L'entend des maps chanter, qu'elle a même qui n'a la peine. Nous séries à prier, nous séries même dans la joie. Mais la vie pour moi, c'est une vraie tragédie. Mais la vie pour moi, c'est une vraie tragédie.
Ooh, that was lovely. The 9th Korean Film Festival is coming to some Australian cities this August and September. It's presented by the Korean Cultural Centre. The festival showcases the very best of Korean culture through film. Festival goers can expect to see a variety of drama, thrillers, comedy, romance, horror and fantasy films. Today we're joined by David Park, the festival director of the 9th Korean Film Festival in Australia. Thanks for coming in today, David.
Thanks for having me, Joel.
Can you tell us how the festival started and how it's grown over the past 9 years?
So I think we kicked off in 2010. This is our 9th year, as you've mentioned. And when we first started the festival, I don't think there was much avenue for Korean films to be screened here in Australia. Fast forward 9 years, we are seeing at least one or two Korean films that are being brought in by private distributors. So I think the market has definitely grown to accommodate for the Australian audience.
Okay. And
yeah, I guess it's a great sign.
So why do you think this has been sort of the most accomplished year so far in the whole 9 years?
I just feel that there's just been... I think the directors have been embracing a lot of other genres. It's just been a very, very nice collective of films. Each year, I think we have about 300 to 350 films produced in Korea domestically, but this year has seen to about 457.
Wow.
So yeah, I guess to try and narrow it down to 22 films is quite a task.
Okay, so if you're narrowing it down, do you sort of pick a particular theme and then run with that, or is that how it works?
Sometimes we go with a theme, but we don't want that to be prevalent throughout all 22 films.
Okay.
I guess our film festival's main focus is to introduce a wide, diverse range of Korean films. So we want to try and give scope to as many genres and as possible. Like, so you want to have your rom-com, you want to have your fantasy film, and we want to have our crime film. And a lot of fans of Korean cinema, I guess, look forward to the gangster flicks.
Yeah.
So we've got that one lined up as well. So
excellent.
If we have like a prevalent theme, it just doesn't coincide with our, you know, vision for the festival.
Yeah. Okay, so you've got 22 films, assuming you've seen them all.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any sort of mentionable highlights in the festival?
I think our opening film is great. I guess it kicks off the festival.
Yeah.
but I just felt that it resonated really strongly with me, because I love seeing strong female leads in films. And this year it's been very interesting how a lot of Korean directors were embracing and writing these fantastic characters. And our opening film is about a girl who lives in the city of Seoul. And the city of Seoul, there's 50 million people just packed into like that small city, and it's very bustling, it's very demanding, but she just says no to all of that, goes into the countryside, you know, grows her own vegetables and just goes for the simple life. And I just think the film, we need more films like this,
yeah.
You know, more films which kind of have that healing factor for the people who watch it.
Cool. Yeah. Apart from that, do you have any particular favorites?
I think a few festival favorites would definitely be Believer, which is a remake, actually, of the 2012 Johnny To film, Drug War.
Okay.
I guess another great film that we'd like to recommend is Forgotten, which has a very nice twist. It's a psychological thriller mixed with mystery. And we'll actually have the director, Jang Han-jun, down.
Oh, okay. A bit of a Q&A?
Yes, Q&A after the screening. So definitely one to look out
that's
for.
That's very cool. So what's the process like in getting all these films together?
So we pretty much watch a ton of these films. And I have to admit, I can't watch all 400 films. So we have a team dedicated to, you know, people who watch these films throughout the year. And I guess the most important thing is not whether it's won, you know, a million awards or whether it's been very successful on the festival circuit. I think what we want to try and aim to do is pick out films which resonate with the Australian audience. Films that, I guess, would really speak to the people here.
Mm. Okay, that's very interesting. The program sounds like it has a wide range of genres, as I said earlier. Mm-hmm. We've got drama to comedy to thrillers. Can you talk through why it is so important to have a variety of films in from high budget to more sort of like art house films? Mm-hmm. Why is that an important thing?
I just feel that a lot of... I think I touched on it briefly, but one or two films come down to Australia by private distributors, and those films are mostly blockbusters, you know, big budgeted films that a lot of people just flock to the cinemas to see. And we felt that our role as a film festival was to now kind of take a step back from the blockbusters. And there are a lot of great indie films. There are a lot of great art house films that are being produced from Korea. And we just wanted to, I guess, use this festival now as, I guess, the limelight for these good films that otherwise wouldn't be picked up from these private distributors or other festivals around Australia.
Other than films, what else can festival goers expect?
We've got guest Q&As. Yeah. So as mentioned briefly, Forgotten's Chang Han-jun will be here. And our closing film will also have the producer and director of the film. So Kim Go-eun would be joining us for Microhabitat, which will be a closing film. That film was a very big and popular film at the Busan Film Festival last year.
Wow.
So
excellent. Mm. Excellent. The festival will be showing in Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne and Canberra. Any plans in the future to eventually get out to all of Australia?
Yes. Up until last year, we were actually in Perth, Adelaide, Darwin and Hobart. This year, we wanted to focus a little bit more on our staple cities. We haven't forgotten those other states yet because we are receiving messages from fans in those states, and we will definitely expand again into those cities.
Excellent. That's excellent. Good luck with it all, David. I hope it runs really smoothly for you.
Thanks, Joel.
And thanks for coming in. That was David Park, the Festival Director of the Korean Film Festival in Australia. The festival will be making its way across cities in Australia from the middle of August to late September. We'll pop all the links and stuff up on our website. Here's some tunes.
Disappears into the night. was then and this is now. We can't go back, we don't know how to make our lives slowly rewind. The miracle has showed us time. Laugh until we cry. A miracle is the shortest time. That was then and this is now. We can't go back, we don't know how to make our lives slowly rewind. A miracle is the shortest time. That was deep and it was light. Well, it was high and it was bright. It made us laugh until we cried.
Jack Ladder and the Dreamlanders there with The Miracle. Up next, we'll be hearing about the new exhibition of Australian French Impressionist John Russell that will be showing at the Art Gallery of New South Wales. Stay tuned, you won't want to miss this one. It's coming up straight after You Beauty with Healing Spirit.
Thing playing in my mind is the mist clears from the night.
Our producer, Sita Sargent, spoke with Wayne Tuncliffe, who is the exhibition curator and head of the art, for the Art Gallery of New South Wales. She chatted with him about the new collection of approximately 100 works by the Australian French Impressionist John Russell.
Two and a half years in the making, the Gallery of New South Wales' latest exhibition, John Russell, Australia's French Impressionist, presents the first major survey of the Sydney-born French Impressionist's work in over 40 years. The exhibition brings together 120 paintings, drawings, and watercolours from all over the world. We spoke to exhibition curator and head of Australian art for Art Gallery New South Wales, Wayne Tunnicliffe, about the importance of Russell within Australia's art history and the significance of this monumental collection of his work.
Russell is one of those artists who sits within and without our art history. If you think of Australian Impressionism as still being one of the most popular art movements, and it's an Impressionism which grew in Australia in the 1880s, flourished in the 1890s, and it tied in with an emerging nationalism, national subjects, national landscape, often masculine labour, and then moved towards federation. That's a simplification, but there are these sort of strong overlaps in that period. And yet the most Impressionist of our Impressionist artists, if you think of French Impressionism as the origin point, wasn't in Australia, was painting in France with the Impressionists themselves and barely painted Australian subjects at the very beginning of his career and the very end of his career, and did not exhibit in Australia after 1883. So he's an artist who sat within and without, with this wonderful position which complicates our histories, but also points to internationalism, which I think was quite typical of Australia in the late 19th century as well. So my interest came from that, but especially from the fact that I think Russell is a really, really fantastic painter. He began with an academic training, moved into the French avant-garde, encountered extraordinary artists, had to throw away everything he had learned to that point and embrace a new style and a new method. And it becomes very apparent in the show how he experimented, how when he had a stride, he became a very great artist indeed, and how extraordinary his ability with colour was, something which was commented on at the time and I think very clearly shows in this exhibition.
Russell spent 40 years of his life in France. He went over in his early 20s, and when he did ultimately return to Australia, he chose not to engage with Australia's artistic scene. I just have to ask, is there a point when he stops being considered an Australian artist and we consider him French?
I think what Russell does is complicate any national narrative. I think Russell always regarded himself as Australian throughout his life, but as you say, 40 years that was spent in France. So I embrace that. I think he is Australian, I think he's French, and I think he's international, as many of us are.
Is there an irony in him, the first untitled work that you showed, about him debating about bringing Australian artists into Australian galleries, but
yes,
all you're doing at the time is bringing in international. Did he go there and be like, okay, I'm international now, put my work into an Australian gallery?
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting question too. So Russell, when he came back to Australia in 1883, advocated for Australian art at the Art Gallery of New South Wales, while he himself was studying in England, returns in 1883 and stays overseas for 40 years. But you couldn't actually learn how to be an artist in Australia at the time, not in Sydney. So there was no art school in Sydney. So to be an artist, you had to train overseas. And I think Russell thought he'd train and come back. But of course, what happened is he has this extraordinary life. Suddenly he's at the centre of the French avant-garde. He's besties with Van Gogh. He's besties with Rodin.
As Wayne just said, Russell found himself at the heart of the French avant-garde movement. He called artists like Monet and Van Gogh his friends. Looking at it now, it seems a bit like he was part of the cool kids club. Which just makes you wonder,
Would we be looking at Russell and giving him all this attention if he wasn't part of this famous unofficial collective of great French Impressionists? Is Russell only viewed as great because of the company he kept? Are we elevating him to a higher standard because we view him as being part of a greater artistic movement? If we examined him alone, would we still consider him a great artist? When we asked head curator Wayne Tunnicliffe, he vehemently disagreed with this idea, saying that yes, Russell was a fantastic painter in his own right. And this is what this exhibition is all about showing.
And I think his story has become eclipsed by his famous friendships. So what I really hope with this exhibition is people actually look at the work and see what a great painter he was, how experimental he was. And I think he's one of the truly extraordinary colourists of that period. And for him to stand up, his mates are there, but geez, he's out there on his own as well.
And then just like finally, what has his influence been on like the Australian art world?
Yeah, well, I think what's interesting with Russell, I think there's a moment of influence in the 1880s when he's writing back to Australia about French Impressionism, while Australian Impressionism is being developed. But I think there's a moment of influence right now. If you go to the Manly Art Gallery and see Luke Scaveras and Ewan McLeod, who went to Balliol last year, followed Russell's footsteps and have painted what he painted, but very much in their style. So I think as a plein air, outdoor painter, a great landscapist, he still has relevance.
That was Cedar Sargent speaking to Wayne Tunnicliffe, exhibition curator, about the new and extensive collection of works by Australian French Impressionist John Russell. The exhibition will be open to the public from the 21st of July until the 11th of November. We'll pop up all the details and tickets and all that sort of stuff up on the website. That's it for the show today. Thank you so much to the producers Cedar, Laura and Jess. You guys have been awesome. Sophie should hopefully be back next week. Hopefully it's not me again because I'm quite clearly terrible at this show. This has been so hot right now on 2SER. And just a quick shout out to myself for tomorrow, Old New Borough Blue. Listen to Zan Rowe and me chat music for about half an hour at 11:30 on Sunday morning. Cheers, guys.